This fall, fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.
Well, hello and welcome, everybody. This is your host, Ken D. Foster. Today on Voices of Courage, we are going to be talking about empathy in the workplace. All right, hold your horses. Yes, empathy in the workplace. It is time to maybe get emotional in the workplace. It's time to maybe increase our listening skills, be able to relate to others in a different way, be able to maybe step your business up into a place where you have very little turnover. You have people that are well satisfied, happy, doing what they love to do in your workplace, and you're getting rid of the emotional traumas and dramas that have been plaguing your workplace for a while. Hey, how does that sound? Does it sound good? Well, listen, for some of you are going, yeah, sounds great, but it's impossible. But that's not true. It is impossible. And we're going to have my guest explain exactly how this is possible when we come back from our break. So we'll be right back, and I'll introduce my guest for today. Well, welcome back, everybody. Today I'm calling the show The Courage to Put Empathy in Action. I have my guest, Natalie Pettahoff, and let me introduce you, Natalie. Hi, welcome.
Hi, Ken. Great to be here. Thank you.
I love it. Well, you know, Natalie, for those of you that don't know her, she is a co-author of the new Wall Street Journal business best-selling book, and we'll get into the book in a little bit. She's a senior consultant, customer experience strategist. Where's that at, Natalie?
Genesis.
Oh, Genesis. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and Genesis, the company has over $7 billion remarkable customer experiences. They're in over 100 companies. Wow. Okay.
70 million experiences that we've delivered.
Yes. 70 million. Okay. All right. Well, that's incredible. So congratulations on that and welcome. So, Natalie, how did you get into the empathy business?
Well, I think I've always been in that business. I just didn't know it. I started out very early. My dad, encouraged me to go to college, and he did that by having me work in an assembly plant, a Ford assembly plant. And that was one of my first lessons in empathy. So working on an assembly line and understanding what people who do that kind of job go through, it opened up my eyes, and I was like, wow, this is really difficult work, and in a different way, not necessarily cognitively, but emotionally, doing the same thing repetitively. And then when I graduated, my dad was all happy and went to work in engineering, and I started to see the world through very interesting eyes when I was working for a automotive company. And if you want to know the details on that story, I'd be happy to share.
Well, I love what you're saying about on the assembly line. My father also had the wisdom to put me on an assembly line right out of high school. And I worked in a place called O'Keefe and Merritt Stoves, putting in 12 screws for a summer. That not only taught me empathy, it got me into college.
Yeah, I think that was my dad's plan. He was kind of like, you need to experience all different walks of life and So that was his way. I mean, it wasn't that I wasn't going to go, but I think he just wanted to give me an appreciation as I was embarking on, you know, lots of studies and being focused and just really understanding the choices that you make in life really make a difference.
Boy, isn't that the truth? Hey, listen, Natalie, why do you believe empathy is like the new business frontier now for us?
Well, I think that in my experiences, one of the things that I found, whether thinking about corporate America as an employee or a customer, one of my first experiences, and so this kind of, what's interesting is you sit down and you write a book, right? And you think it's like everything that you're trying to say right now. But as I reflected on writing, I thought, okay, where did this genesis of this, you know, work come from? And one of the first experiences I had working was I was working as an engineer at an automotive company. And they came to me and they said, hey, you know, we want to see if we can reduce the galvanizing, which is the coating that you put on the car door before you paint. And I said, well, why are you thinking about that? They were like, well, you know, we can reduce costs and we think maybe we don't need it. And could you do the corrosion testing? And I'm like, yeah, okay, sure. I said, but I can pretty much tell you that it's going to corrode faster and it wouldn't be good. They go, well, could you please do the test? I did the test, came back, presented it to them. And then they said, okay, thanks very much. I go, wait a minute. I'm really curious what your decision is. And they said, oh, well, we're not going to do the two-sided galvanizing. And I said, but then there'll be cars running around Detroit with holes in the side. And they said, probably. And I said, I'm really confused here. Why wouldn't you be concerned about your customers who are buying these cars? And they said, well, why are you so concerned? You're just an engineer. And so this was one of my first experiences as an engineer and seeing the world through a corporation's eyes. And it was all about cost cutting. And for a very long time, historically, if you go all the way back to the first industrial revolution, everything has been about corporate focused efficiency and effectiveness. And unfortunately, that often leaves both the customer and the employee experience at a very bad place. And so I think part of what we're seeing in the world from the great resignation, the great regret, the great return-ish, which has resulted in the quiet quit, or you see customers, you know, companies struggling because customers just aren't buying from them anymore. I think what you're seeing is the culmination of the last 100, 150 years of this thing we call corporations really hitting a tipping point.
Boy, isn't that the truth? I really like what you're saying. And that that had to have been eye-opening as a young engineer to have that kind of response. Yeah, I'm shocked right now. I'm thinking, really?
Yeah, I was literally like, it hurt my soul because I went to University of Michigan and they teach you ethics and engineering. Because if you make a mistake, bridges fall down, airplanes explode. I mean, your choices and decisions are really important. So they taught us a lot of ethics and to really be conscious of your choices, check your math. And so when they made that decision, I was like, wow, that really doesn't sit with me. And I spent my whole career really going from different types of jobs, being an employee in a corporation, being a leader, becoming a management consultant, becoming an analyst in the business world. And every single job taught me a lot about how corporations run and how decisions get made. And I was fortunate in this particular position to be able to kind of codify all those learnings and understandings to kind of try to help leaders understand why does it matter to use empathy as a leadership skill. And we're not talking about sympathy, right? Sympathy is often confused with empathy. And sympathy is kind of like, it generally comes from your own perception. And it might be saying something like, oh, I'm really sorry that's happening to you, which is kind, but it really doesn't change anything. And empathy is sitting in the seat of your customers and your employees and seeing the world through their eyes. And when leaders have the guts to do this, which interestingly enough doesn't happen often enough, what they see are the experiences that they at work, the experiences that they provide their customers. And when they see what the experience actually is, they make very, very different decisions. And so that's kind of the nexus of the book and the work that I'm doing now in the world.
Well, I want to get into the book. We're going to take a quick break. When we do, I also want to ask you, you know, I started out the show saying, hey, do we need to put emotion into the workplace? It sounds like we do with empathy. So I'd like to kind of, you know, touch base on that a little bit when we get back from the break. So we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Well, welcome back, everybody. I'm talking with Dr. Natalie Petahoff, and we're talking about empathy in the workplace. If you just joined us, Natalie, sounds like we need to put emotion into the workplace instead of just logic and logical decisions based on economic models. What's your hit on that?
Wow. Okay. There's a whole lot to unpack there. Yes, yes, and yes. So I think emotions is something that most corporations stay away from because they don't know how to manage that, or they think they don't know how to manage that. So in the book, we talk about four steps. Listen. Right. So if you and I were having a conversation, the first thing I'd do is I'd listen. I'd get to know you and understand what was important to you. And then I'd understand and predict how I could contribute to you in your life and to the conversation. And then that's how I would act in the world and contribute to the conversation. And then over time, I'd learn what was important to you. And that would create a lasting friendship. And so what we're suggesting are those four simple steps. If leaders actually put those into action when they're interacting. So corporations tend to be a lot about tell versus ask, not really about active listening. And so really sitting in the seat of someone else and understanding what's important to them and not necessarily making assumptions about what they think. And what's fascinating, right, because people are like, oh, well, I don't have time for that, or, you know, it's soft skills. What we're finding in our economic models is that the companies are actually more profitable, right? So corporations have to make money. Otherwise, it can't stay in business. You have to have more money coming in than going out. That's fair enough. But you want to make sure that you're doing it in a way that you're enabling your employees to be the best that they can be, right? And so really understanding what do they need? I mean, why did the Great Resignation happen? Well, my personal opinion is COVID gave us this opportunity, a cause for pause. And it allowed all of us to kind of look at our life and self-reflect and say, is this what we want for our life? Or do we really want something different? And so a lot of people's conclusion was, I'm done with the rat race. I'm done with not being listened to or seen or heard or felt. And they made other choices. Some people retired, some people reskilled, some people, you know, just decided that they're going to completely change their life. And so I think now, even with a quiet quit, people are not necessarily giving up their jobs. It's a recession, so it's important, you know, to have income. But I think they're quietly not necessarily going along with the status quo. And I think, you know, when you start to look at what is the cost of not really understanding your employees, you look at many industries, for instance, the airline industry. They don't have enough baggage handlers, right? So baggage gets lost or just sitting in a pile somewhere. There's not enough pilots. There's not enough people to help at the desk when people are boarding planes. And so what I think a lot of companies are finding is value of employees and value of great employees. I can tell you personally, going on vacation or going out to dinner, there's empty tables, right? So you're like, well, why can't you seat me? And they're like, well, we don't have wait staff and we don't have enough cooks, right? So how can you run a business without employees? And what companies need to understand is there are two assets in a company, employees and customers. Without employees, you cannot create products and services. And without customers, there's no one to buy them. So if you're not thinking about the emotions of these two groups and the cost or the benefit to your business, you're missing something really important.
Yeah, you're going to be missing a company. We don't pay attention to it. You know, I think you're touching on why business is broken today. I had one of my friends and a guest a while back here, Natalie. His name is Stephen M. R. Covey. And he has a new book out after his first book. His first book was The Speed of Trust. Second book is called Trust and Inspire. And he's going from the old control and command in corporate America to trust and inspire. And we're really getting into the nitty gritty of what trust and inspire is all about, which is what I love that we're talking about. So broken in business, you know, if I say, well, all right, Natalie, what's broken in business? What would you say?
Everything. Pretty much
that's
everything.
Pretty broad.
Yeah, it's pretty broad. I mean, to be more specific, I think part of it is how we structure jobs, how we provide things for employees, how we, what early on in my career, one of the things I did was I created an employee development program. So I separated the appraisal process from the development process. And I really asked a group of employees, this is kind of my test pilot. I said, what is really important to you in terms of growing and learning? And the answers that I got back were really interesting. And then I said, okay, now let's take a look at what's important to the company. So for the company to grow and they're going to pay, you know, give you a paycheck. How can we marry these two? And very often companies don't really sit down and really understand what the goals are of that employee and what the goals of the company and start to really look at that. What's in it for me, right? From the employee's point of view. And it's really simple. It takes, you know, companies spend a lot of time in the, you know, this process, right? But they really aren't listening from the employee's point of view. And part of that is psychological safety, which means, do you feel safe enough to be able to talk to your managers and your leaders about what's really important? Or do you have kind of that command and control, tell versus ask, you know, culture? And so I think when I say everything, you know, one of the famous quotes is culture eats strategy. And I think it's really the culture that's caused these major changes as of late.
Well, you know, it seems like we're going from a company centric to a customer centric to now almost an employee centric model. Is that accurate, or is there a balance in those three, I guess?
Well, I think it's really important to understand that the way a company functions and to be able to pay salaries is they do need to make a profit. But how they make a profit, if it's people over or profit over people, and they're really discounting those two assets, then in the end, they're not going to be able to make it, right? And so I think up until now, maybe companies have been able to do that. But I think with the turning point, the tipping point of COVID and people really starting to self-reflect about what's really, truly important, now I think companies have to be more aware. Or they're really not going to make it. And I believe, Ken, that we are just at the beginning of this revolution, that customers have been doing it for a while. They vote with their mouths or with their feet. And companies are like, well, where did all our revenue go, right? Well, your customers don't want to do business with you. They just don't tell you. And employees tell you either by not really doing a really great job or attrition. And so these, you know, customer lifetime value, employee lifetime value are things that you can calculate, things that you can get a hold of. And it's really, really key for companies and leaders in particular, I think, because the tone of the culture is set by the leaders.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think in the past, and I don't know what's happening currently in this, you're probably up on that, but in the past, they aged out. You know, they started aging out their population at 55, somewhere around there. And then they, you know, by the time you're in, you know, the people are in their 60s, there's very few of them left even in the organizations. And a lot of times that was a mistake because that's where the wisdom is. They've actually, you know, it's a dysfunctional model that gets rid of the ones that have the most experience and wisdom in the company so that younger ones can come up. Is that still happening in the workplace?
It is still happening, and I think it's an old mindset, old command and control, efficiency and effectiveness, profit over people mindset, where you look at the people who are making the biggest salaries. It's often the people who are there for a very long time. And so if you're just looking at bottom line economics, you're going to think, well, that's just a human being. So why would I pay one person $20,000 and another person $80,000, right? So I'll get rid of the people who make $80,000 and I'll give the same job, right, that requires tribal knowledge and wisdom and how things work and experience to that $20,000 a year person. And I don't want to discount anyone who's just coming into the workforce, because I remember how that felt. It was hard to get a job if you haven't had a job before, right? So I appreciate that. But there is also something that happens through trial and error and making mistakes and learning, and that wisdom that comes from the employees who have that experience are absolutely key and can make changes and decisions much quicker and faster than people who just don't have that kind of reflective knowledge.
Yeah, I agree. Well, listen, I got to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk to you a little bit about customer service and infusing empathy in customer service. Is that really profitable? We'll be right back to answer that.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
All right. Well, let's jump right into that question, Natalie, after this break here. That was a great break. I really enjoyed that. The question is this. Is it profitable to bring empathy into customer service?
So think about the last time you interfaced with a company, chatbot, IVR, press one for press two, right? How frustrated were you? And did you think, what on earth is this company thinking? And then did you think, I'm never buying from them again. This is a pain in the butt, right? And so when you start to think about customer lifetime value, you think about loyalty, you think about retention. If the experience, so what companies don't understand is what they're really selling, they're not really selling a pencil. They're selling the experience of the pencil, right? So if you're very product focused, you're going to end up not really understanding what business you're in. So think about a pencil, like you go to erase something and it leaves smudges on your paper. Or you try to sharpen the lead and it doesn't stay sharpened or it breaks, right? And so it's not necessarily a pencil that you're buying. It's the experience of using that. And then when you go to get help, is that company there for you or not? Or do they make it really difficult to get a hold? Do they hide their 1-800 number? Is the chatbot giving you stupid canned answers, right? And you just go in a loop and then you have to call. So think about that. Like, I think what I would encourage most executives to do is think about the experiences you have as you interface with companies and how does that make you feel? And then start to realize that's probably what you're doing to your own customers. And oftentimes, because executives are so far removed from that customer experience that they don't realize that they're actually pushing that most important asset, those customers, away from the company. And it, like, when you start to think about it, it makes absolutely no economic sense to make your customers so frustrated that they leave. And there used to be a mindset of, well, you know, build it and they will come. But with the advent of social media and digital media and people sharing and sharing from a very truthful point of view, I mean, go on any website that you buy something from, check Twitter, check Facebook, check any of the social media sites. And I always look at the reviews, and I know many people do this. And when you look at the reviews, if the reviews are negative, I'm not going to buy. Why would I do that? If somebody else already had the experience and the experience was bad and there's hundreds of thousands of companies for me to choose from, why would I choose a company that doesn't care about their reviews? Now, if the reviews are negative and then you start to see the company say, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. Let us replace that. How can we help you? Then you kind of think, okay, at least they're listening. But a company who's really, truly focused on being in business needs to have great products, great services, and amazing customer service.
Boy, I can think of some industries right now that there's such an opportunity, right? I can think of the medical groups in San Diego that have that. I know I've been in their loops, and I'm thinking of some of the restaurants down here and some of the especially the hotels, some of their reviews. I feel bad for them because you're right. As a consumer, I look at the reviews. I think most of us do now. And if they're not good reviews, I'm not eating there. I'm not sleeping there. I'm definitely not buying something that's going to have to return or somebody else's, like you said, had that customer experience. So I think we're really touching on something. And do you think it all goes back to empathy, though? Do you think it goes back to customer empathy?
I do. And so here's the key. So one of the things that I used to do early in my career is I would record calls from the call center of customers actually calling in and trying to get help. And now what I do is I grab screenshots of someone interacting with the chatbot or SMS, and I put them up for executives to see. And I say, this is the experience of your customers. How would you feel if this was happening to you? Would you continue to do business with that company? And they're like, well, of course not. And I said, well, okay, understand this is what happens to hundreds or thousands of millions of your customers on a daily basis. Do you understand now why your revenue is decreasing? And they're like, well, you know, this might be an isolated instance. I'm like, no, we can record these or grab these screenshots on a daily basis for the next 2 years. And unless you change something, unless you sit in the seat of the customer and understand how you're delivering products and services and experiences, unless you change that, you're just doing the same thing and expecting different results. And that, we know from Einstein, is the definition of insanity.
Yeah, we do know that. So I want to jump back into the empathy side of leadership with the employees. You know, a lot of employees, I would say the COVID thing, if did anything, it helped people to identify who am I and what do I want? Who am I and what do I want? How does that mindset fit into a corporate culture? And, how can leaders step into this empathy model so that they can be much more aware of who their employees are and what they need to grow, develop, and learn?
So I think, again, it's this practice of being an empathy practitioner, which means really sitting in the seat of that employee and understanding what's important to them. So whether you're a C-level executive and you're holding all hands meetings and employees can contribute to the conversation. I go back to psychological safety in the corporate culture. Do employees feel safe enough to tell the truth about how they feel? So if you don't have psychological safety, then there needs to be some culture of overhaul. I think as an everyday manager, what's really key is when you're talking to employees is to understand what they're going through, what's important to them, and asking those questions, really listening, understanding, acting in new ways, and then learning from that experience. And I think that employees have often used their voice. They have very clearly said, I'm not happy. I really like this kind of work. I really want to do this. And I think corporations in general, the culture is not really to hear those things that employees are saying. And so employees kind of learn, well, it doesn't really make any difference if I tell the truth or not. Or sometimes employees get, there's retaliation or it doesn't really change anything. So there's complacency. But I think that if you, as an individual leader, you may not be able to change your whole company, but you can change the people that you interface with, the people that you interact with. And even if you're not leading a group of people, how are you conducting yourself when you're interfacing with your colleagues, right? Are you really listening to understand their point of view and what's important to them? And when you start to do that, I think other people notice, and I think other people can start to feel safe around you to be able to do that. And it really takes one person to start.
I love that. All right, let's before I take a quick break, let's go to your book. Where can people get Empathy in Action?
It's pretty much available anywhere: Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Target. We've been very fortunate with our distribution.
That's awesome. Well, I sure look forward to reading it. I think it's a key book. I believe this book is on par with Good to Great, and I believe that we all need to read it. I think it's a game changer for our leaders. So I'm going to recommend it to my audience, Natalie. I think it's the way to go. And all right, so I'm going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. And after the break, I'm just going to ask a quick question about how can we relate empathy into changing the world? Because I know that's part of what you do. So.
Hi, Ken D. Foster here. Are you in a place that you would like to unleash the power within your mind? I teach a class. It's called The Limitless Experience. This is about intentional living. It's a great opportunity to learn how to operate your mind efficiently, expand your knowledge, tap into your inner wisdom, and connect with like-minded individuals who are evolving and making a difference in this world. This class is designed to help you unlock your true potential and achieve success in all areas of your life. By attending this class, you will gain valuable insights into your life purpose, legacy, how to get unstuck, how to break chronic patterns that are stopping your success, overcome limiting beliefs, and develop a positive mindset that will help you achieve your goals. I hope to see you soon at the Limitless Experience. Are you ready to uplift your thinking, redefine what's possible, and have the energy, passion, and power to accomplish your greatest dreams? Hi, this is Ken D. Foster. For 28 years, I've coached over 10,000 people to see the unseeable, know the unknowable, and do the impossible. Now, I've put the time-tested wisdom principles into my latest book, The Courage to Change Everything: Daily Strategies and Essential Wisdom to Awaken Your Inner Genius. This book changes your thinking as you read it. It's time to change it deep inside. You know this. So come on, expand what's possible, increase your courage, step into your destiny, and order today at couragetochange.us. That's couragetochange.us. When you order today, you'll receive a personalized coaching session with me. Obviously, this is a limited offer. So why wait? Change for the better and order now at couragetochange.us.
Well, welcome back. Today, we're talking to Dr. Natalie Petahoff, and she's got her new book out. And we're talking, taking a deep dive really into empathy. And Natalie, all right, so I've got a couple minutes left. I want to ask you, you know, how do we use empathy to change the world? And it's kind of like, what's your message to the world right now? What do you got going here with that?
Well, I think if we all slow down, so sometimes you have to go fast, you have to slow down. And so whether you're interfacing with someone at a restaurant, whether you're talking to a friend, whether you're interfacing with family or friends or in the workplace, if you just slow down enough to actually be interested in the other person and to really hear what they're saying and what's important to them, I think what you'll find is that you're listening in a very different way, and the responses that you get back from that person will be very different. And I think that we all make mistakes. We're not perfect. We don't always approach the situation from what somebody else wants and needs. But I think what's really key is to begin somewhere and to really start to think about those actions. I think that if we actually approached all interactions, whether you're a leader of a country or whether you're just a regular citizen or an employee, if we really start to think about putting yourself in the seat of someone else, we wouldn't necessarily, you know, be irritating drivers. We wouldn't be rude in restaurants. We wouldn't be, I truly believe in the bigger picture. And I think that if we could understand starving children, we would really understand how important that is to feed our children, to educate them well, to understand how difficult it is to be a teacher. And I really even truly believe that if the world was centered on empathy and sitting in the seat of other people, we might not even have wars. Because at the end of the day, we're all very much the same. We want love. We want respect. we want to be seen, heard, and acknowledged. And I think those are the key things that without that, there's a lot of frustration and conflict in the world.
I love it. I love it. Well, I got to run, but you know what? This has been an amazing interview. Hope you'll stay in the green screen, in the green room for a minute. And sure. I want to just close the show, but thank you so much for being here. This has been a very inspiring show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Ken, very much.
And for all of you that are listening, you know, this was an amazing show. I know some of you are going, yeah, my peers need to hear this. So I encourage you to do that. Just go and, you know, share this link with them. You can find all the shows on voicesofcourage.us. You can find us on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn. Just Google Voices of Courage. It'll come right up and you can share this show with your friends and peers. I hope you will. From my heart to yours, I pray that you continue to look for and see the unseeable and know the unknowable and do the impossible. Take care.